Welcome to another episode of From the Roots Up. I'm your host, Sean Frame, and happy to be here with you again this week to talk about the things that matter to all of us from a grassroots perspective, from the roots up. I know a lot of people probably, you yourself may even be wondering, why, Sean, why would you do this? Why would you take time out of your Sunday to share these topics with people and have conversations with folks about these issues that matter to us so much? And, you know, I've thought about that a lot recently, you know, given the things that are happening in the world. And, you know, I just have to say that, you know, I grew up with an understanding of how my family for generations was transformed by the ideals and programs and of our nation, a notion that we were all better together, that the government fundamentally was there to provide the foundation under which we could all on which we could all stand, and the foundation on which we could all hopefully strive to and achieve the most that we could in our lives. I saw it with my own mother, who was the fifth child of a very poor family living in Western Washington. Grew up never, you know, with food insecurity for sure, with the sort of hunger related to not always having enough food, relying on what you could grow and raise to have enough to eat. But she was able to get a scholarship and go to the University of Washington and later become a teacher. And on that foundation, she was later able to become a technical writer and have a career that I'm sure she didn't even imagine as a young person. And all of this was possible because we had, you know, well-funded programs, ideas that we all agreed on. Even if you were, say, you know, on the far right or on the far left, there was this notion that we all were in this project together, this American project, and that expanding that project to include more people was always going to be the best idea, the best way to achieve as a nation. So in these times when all of these notions are somewhat under question, when we all stare at each other suspiciously wondering, does this person agree with me? Are they on the other side of the issue from me? Do they even understand where I come from? It's really important that we reestablish common ground, a notion of what this American experience is and what it can do and what it is for. So that's why I do it. I love this country. I love the state I live in. I love my community. And I know from running for office and actually holding office for a number of years that we have more in common than we don't. And even when somebody is far from me in terms of the way they look at the solutions and how they ought to be structured, we often agree that there is a challenge that we are facing and that these challenges must be solved. And today is one of those issues that I think we've all come to understand is reaching a crisis level. I'm talking about the homeowners insurance crisis. The price of homeowners insurance is rising. We've seen catastrophic fires now throughout our state in California that have left uninsured people with nothing. We've seen people dropping their policies, even in areas where there's a high fire risk danger, for example, because they can no longer afford to pay the premiums. And this isn't just a California issue. This is a national issue. So we're going to look at this from a variety of angles, but I want to get to why it's important to me. In 2014, I was living in Placerville, and I'd already lived there for about 6 years at that point. And I got my homeowner's insurance bill, and it had gone from $800 a year to $2,800 a year overnight, basically in the space of 1 year. And I went to my insurance agent, and I said, this must be a mistake. How can this be? And he said, no, the insurance companies have determined that you live in a high fire risk area, and there have been some huge fires in this sort of zone of California, call it the foothills and mountains of Eastern California. And so therefore, they're raising their rates to accommodate that increased risk. Now, more than three times my prior rate seemed like an extreme increase to me. And mind you, this was before paradise. This was before the car fire. This was before everything that's happened in the southern part of our state. But yet, insurance companies were already looking ahead. The risk of wildfire and other damaging events to homes was increasing, and the costs were going to increase right along with it. So I went to my elected officials. At that time, it was, I believe, Ted Gaines was my state senator, and Bigelow was my assembly member. And I reached out to them and I said, hey, we've got a crisis brewing here. You ought to be aware. You're our elected officials. You represent this area that has all this risk. And you know, what are we going to do? I mean, I really came at it from the point of view that despite them, that they weren't in the same party as me, we certainly all inhabit this space. This was our home, not just my home, but also their home, that they would face the same risks I would, and so would their family members and friends and everybody they knew and loved. Even if we were in different parties, this affected us the same way. I was very sad to hear back from only one of them. That was Ted Gaines, and he told me not to worry, the market would take care of the risk problem. And though I couldn't understand how that would even be possible, because the market was the thing that was forcing the rates higher, there wasn't a lot I could do. I was a school board member at the time, but I certainly didn't have the kind of political power required to get things done. So I filed it away, and I thought, boy, this is going to not end well at some point. And sure enough, you know, fire after fire, leading to the, you know, burning down of paradise, for example, you know, massive fires up, you know, in the Redding area. And in 2019, I got a notice that my policy had been canceled and that I either had to make some pretty significant changes to the way my property looked and some even structural things to my house, or they were not going to insure me anymore. And so I did the things they asked. And when you added that to the over $3,000 in premium they were now charging me, that year I spent $10,000 insuring a $400,000 home. This probably sounds familiar to you if you've lived anywhere where there is anything close to fire risk, and now even in places where there isn't any fire risk in California. You've had this experience. You know somebody who's had this experience. And it cuts across the political aisle, as I suspected way back in 2014. It's foundational to our ability to live in these places that we are able to insure our homes. Now, we will talk a little bit about the FAIR plan later. I'm sure you've all heard that term. We'll get into some nerdy parts of that if you want. And but I think let's talk about the top level of these things, because, you know, I thought, oh, man, this is just a California problem. But then I thought about it a little further, and I happened to be running for Congress that year, and which is a federal office, a national office representing our area. And so I really dug into it. And what I found was this was something that was happening everywhere. Dozens of states are facing a similar crisis, and that crisis has only gotten worse. And you can imagine the risks that, you know, these states are facing, in addition to the fire that we face here in California. Parts of our nation, of course, are dealing with ever stronger hurricanes and more frequent hurricanes. Hurricanes landing in places with a ferocity and force that they have never hit before, places far inland. We have, of course, flooding that's sometimes associated with those events, but also associated with things like sea level rise. There are bomb cyclones. Who knew what a bomb cyclone was even 5 years ago? I had never heard the term. And now every winter we hear about bomb cyclones that are hitting the Pacific Northwest or, you know, hitting the northeastern seaboard. And then polar vortexes. I've never heard that term either. And now it's every winter. Oh, it's a polar vortex. And now, you know, parts of the country that are not used to incredibly cold temperatures will see those cold temperatures, and that causes incredible damage to infrastructure and homes and pipes, and you can imagine. So, you know, each one of these things, by the way, increases risk, and insurance companies, when they see increased risk, they have increased premiums. And in fact, Florida, not California, has the highest average homeowners insurance premiums in the nation, because they face multiples of these risks, not just a single risk. And so, and they don't have some of the protections in place, the consumer protections in place in Florida that we have in California. So what you've seen in Florida is that rates are now, you know, on average about three times what they are in California. However, the companies are happy to operate there because they feel like they're being properly compensated for the risks they're taking. In California, we limit the amount that companies can charge, and they have to, when they want to increase their rates, they have to get them approved. And so therefore, our rates are lower. However, many companies have fled the primary homeowners insurance market because they see it as too risky. So, you know, I can't tell you from my point of view which one of those is better or worse. I think both of them are tragic and awful, particularly if you see your home as your life's savings, as many people do. It's terrifying to see the cost rising to a level that you may be forced to consider canceling your insurance if your home is paid off, or perhaps moving because you can no longer afford to live where you were. And, you know, part of that was why I left Placerville, because I could see the writing on the wall. My home value was not appreciating as fast as it would somewhere else, and I had a lot of my savings tied up in my home, and the cost of owning that home were going up, and they were going up in an unpredictable way, and they were going up by a lot. At some point, I could see in the future as a middle-class person that the math wasn't going to work out for me, and it was definitely one of the things that made us consider selling our home and moving. So I'm sure you're hearing this and you're going, yeah, it makes you want to hyperventilate because it is the most fundamental thing for people. And by the way, like if you're a renter and you're listening to this and you're saying, it doesn't matter to me, just understand that the increased insurance costs are one of the major drivers of increased rent costs. So if you're a renter and you say, well, I don't own a house, this isn't my problem, the reality is that those costs are being passed along to you, and they are going to keep being passed along to you, and it will not stop until the cost of owning property has stabilized due to a more stable and predictable insurance market. This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net. We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. We're talking about homeowners insurance today. One of those issues that gets everybody wound up and tense because we all know this is one of the great challenges we're facing. I want to say, you know, I haven't talked about the underlying causes of all of these increases in our homeowners insurance policy and the risks our insurance companies face. But, you know, let's be clear. They think that it's climate change. Meaning the insurance companies. And these are folks whose entire livelihood is based upon the notion of how much money they can make in premiums versus how much they outlay for events that happen. So I'll just say this, you can believe in climate change and that it's human caused or not. The fact of the matter is your insurance company has already decided it's real. They are pricing accordingly and we are all living with it. And I didn't want to make this an episode about climate because I think that's one that an issue unto itself. But I did want to say that your insurers definitely 100% believe that climate change is real and that the risks to them and you and us are increasing. So let's talk about what's happening here in California. You know, a lot of you probably seen that dreaded non-renewal notice. I've gotten one for every piece of property I've owned except one in the last 10 years. And that's a terrifying notice to receive because, you know, it seems very often very vague about what they're asking you to do. It's not clear, even if you do those things, if they will renew your policy. And then you know that your rate is going to go up right alongside the increased costs you had to mitigate whatever it was they wanted you to mitigate. In some cases, it's just absurd. And it's clear that they're using things like AI instead of human beings to make these determinations. For example, for a place in Arcata, California, I was told that the wildfire risk was a 7 out of 10. This is a place that gets over 50 inches of rain per year. And when it's not rainy, it's foggy, where the biggest challenge that homes face there is keeping mold and mildew out, not wildfires. And yet it was considered a 7 out of 10 wildfire risk. That just tells you that, you know, while we think of these insurance companies as perfect vessels of capitalism that totally understand their risks, they're offloading some of the tasks of determining risk to computers that have no basis for understanding what it is they are looking at. They are looking at data sets, and they are not looking at on-the-ground conditions. And so while this may improve, we're in this weird time right now where determinations about our property and our ability to insure it are being handed off to computers that are completely unaccountable. On that point, you know, if you've received the dreaded non-renewal notice, you've also probably received some things you were supposed to do. Alternately, when you talk to your insurance agent, they may tell you, look, I think you could probably get a better deal on the California FAIR plan. And if you've gotten a quote from FAIR, I think you may have come up with the notion that it is not FAIR. FAIR is just an acronym, and it doesn't actually matter what it stands for. It's one of those things where you hear it and you think of of 1984 and Newspeak, where what is being said and what is being done are completely polar opposites, but here we are. The California FAIR Plan was created as a pool of the same insurers who insure you in the primary market to take on the greater risk properties in our state. And in this plan, in this pool, they actually it's insurance companies, it's not the state, but let's be clear, when they collect premiums, they collect them into this pool and then they pay out in these high risk areas. We've just had some huge events in Southern California, and it's my understanding now that the pool is about $1 billion short. And so at that point, either they're going to have to raise rates on everybody who has a California FAIR plan to make that up, and they're not going to have to come up with some notion of how that could be fairly divided, or the taxpayers of our state are going to have to fill in that hole. And in any event, if you've been offered a California FAIR plan, you notice there was also this other plan that you had to purchase at the same time called a wraparound plan. And that wraparound plan covers the parts of insurance that the FAIR plan does not cover. Now you're saying, wait a minute, I thought I got the FAIR plan to replace my previous insurance plan. Well, yes, but the FAIR plan does not cover many things that your current homeowner's regular primary market homeowner's plan covers. So it really just covers the structure and the rebuilding cost. Everything else that you have in your homeowner's insurance policy, and if you go look at it, there are quite a few things, liability and contents coverage and staying in a hotel when you lose your home and all those things. Well, those are extra. So that's what the wraparound policy covers. And when you add the two premiums together, usually it's significantly higher than you were paying in the primary market. Now, I've heard some anecdotal stories about people who actually saved money on the FAIR plan, but I have not been able to confirm those. My experience has been that if you go to the FAIR plan, you're going to see an increased cost, and you're going to see less coverage, and you're going to have to buy wraparound coverage to fill in the gaps. So that's a lot to take in. But I'm guessing many of you have been down this road and had this experience by now, because it's become all too common, even in places that are not significantly risky in terms of fire. So here's another thing that people do when they get that FAIR plan and wraparound and bill, and their house is paid off and they can't afford it because they're on a fixed income. This is happening to many seniors who live in fire-prone areas. Then they just say, you know what, I can't afford this anymore, and I guess I'm just going to have to go without. That is an incredibly risky thing to do. First, of course, the obvious thing is if your place were to burn down in a fire, you would not have any money coming back to you. And if you have your life savings tied up in your home, you lost it right then and there. Not only did you lose it, here's the crazy thing. There will be costs to mitigate the things that burned up on your property. Let's say you had a septic tank. Let's say you had a propane tank. Those things that may have been damaged during the fire and probably were, and created some, you know, waste on your property, basically, that needs to be cleaned up. Well, you're going to get a bill for that. Now, if you're insured, your insurance will cover that. But if you're not insured, you know, they're going to cover it as part of your rebuild cost. But if you're not insured, you were going to get a bill on top of having just lost your life savings. So I can't emphasize enough how risky that strategy is. And if you find yourself in a position where you cannot afford your policy, I hate to say it, but in today's market, if we don't do anything, you should consider moving and selling your home, because honestly, you cannot lose your life savings and be given a big bill, could be tens of thousands of dollars for cleanup on your property at the same time. That risk is just too high. So, I don't want to, you know, I'm not here to like tell you what to do with your finances, but I will just say, you know, don't risk it. Don't do that. You know, it's not going to work out well for you if anything goes wrong. You're taking an enormous risk with yours and your family's financial future. And what does that mean? I mean, think about it downstream, right? There is the potential, if we do not solve this insurance crisis, that parts of our state are going to become uninhabitable. You heard me right. And actually, when I was running for Congress in 2019, I went and talked to an expert about what they saw as the future of this. And they said, if we do not figure out how to make our communities fire safe, fire resilient, and insurable, parts of our state will become uninhabitable due to the risk of fire. And the only people who will be able to afford to live in those parts of the state are people who can afford to lose everything without it being catastrophic to them. That is a scary prospect and one we absolutely have to avoid. From the Roots Up is brought to you by the Six Pack. Crack open some change and support the candidates and causes we need in these times. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club, there's always something happening. Come celebrate our 25 years at this location, April 11th to 13th. Who is responsible for all of this? Did I create the fire risk at my house? Well, I do bear some responsibility about how my property looks, right? And how fire safe my house is. And we're definitely going to talk about that. But did I create the underlying conditions of extreme drought followed by extreme rains, followed by extreme growth of vegetation that turns into a fire risk? I absolutely did not create those conditions. There are folks who did create those conditions. They're the folks who are contributing right now as we speak to climate change. And I think part of the answer has to be some mitigation cost by people who are prime users of fossil fuels, by people who are extracting fossil fuels. Because if we don't, they are allowed to make almost unlimited profits while at the same time creating almost unlimited risks for the rest of us. So as we think about how to mitigate this problem, I mean, I think we definitely have to understand that there is a contributory effect of the folks who are involved in creating climate change in the first place and continuing to make it worse. That's just me. I mean, I think there might be a lot of ways to fix this, but you know, when you're looking for money, you got to go where the money is. And there is definitely a lot of money in fossil fuel extraction, fossil fuel refining, fossil fuel burning. And so maybe some part of the solution ought to lie in that area where there is a lot of money sloshing around. But let's talk about what we can do. I think there are some really positive things out there that we could consider. Let's look at Paradise, California, which, as we mentioned earlier, was tragically burned to the ground. I think nearly 80 people lost their lives and many more had their lives completely destroyed. And Paradise has decided they're coming back and they're going to come back better than ever, more resilient than ever, and really create a place that could be the model for how communities deal with these risks. So, you know, they're demanding that new construction is built with stricter fire codes, that their fire-resistant homes are built with fire-resistant materials, such as metal roofing, fireproof siding, and tempered glass windows to help mitigate the risk of wildfires. They're also looking at improved defensible space and vegetation management. The town is really focusing on clearing dead vegetation, managing overgrown brush, and creating defensible space around homes and public buildings. And this involves regular vegetation management programs to reduce fuel loads and that could feed wildfires. And the goal is to create fire breaks and buffers that slow or stop the spread of fire if it were to occur. And then finally, they have community education fire preparedness initiatives. Paradise is investing in public education campaigns to teach residents about fire safety and preparedness. And that includes things like evacuation plans, which they absolutely did not have in their prior fire. Maintaining defensible space, of course, like we talked about. And understanding emergency alert systems and making sure to opt into them. And the town is also working on improved communication networks so residents are better informed during a wildfire, allowing for quicker evacuations and more coordinated responses. This model is something that ought to be replicated throughout California and other places that are prone to wildfire. And doing so in the short and even long term ought to bring rates back down to a more sane level as it starts getting done at scale. When a place is burned, we have the opportunity to rebuild better, and we have to do that as part of what we do. And the expense of doing that is obviously something that is an investment for our future. In a moment, we'll talk with former California State Insurance Commissioner Dave Jones about what can be done legislatively and what we can do about this crisis. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening. Come celebrate our 25 years at this location, April 11th to 13th. I am here today with Dave Jones, who is the Director of Climate Risk Initiative for the Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment at UC Berkeley Law, former California State Insurance Commissioner. And we're going to have a robust conversation about the insurance industry, the climate crisis, and many other things that I think impact all of us, whether we know it or not. Welcome, Dave. Thanks for joining me here today.
Great to be with you, Sean, and your listeners.
So, you know, one of the things I've always thought was great about you is that you have this deep understanding of these issues, and yet you can explain it to folks in a way that they understand it. Because, you know, when we're talking about things like insurance markets and climate risk and what that, you know, these are very complicated financial issues. They're complicated scientific issues. But, you know, you and I met years and years ago. And I had a conversation about this. And what do you say to folks when they say to you, Dave, my insurance is he getting canceled or has gotten super expensive, and I just don't understand why? What do you tell them in a way that they can understand it?
It is hard to understand, but what I start with is, what is the prime cause of this crisis across California and the United States and the globe, which is the climate crisis. Insurance is the climate crisis canary in the coal mine, and the canary is dying. What's happening is that insurance companies are seeing their payouts go up globally throughout the United States and in California. And insurance companies are for-profit companies, and they respond to increased losses in two ways. One is they raise price. And we're seeing a lot of that in California and a lot of that across the United States. And two, they also stop renewing insurance and stop writing new insurance. And they do both these things simultaneously. And so in the states and regions where climate change-driven severe and extreme weather-related events have fallen hardest, whether it's wildfire, drought, extreme heat, flooding, hurricanes, tornadoes, hail, severe convective storms, that's just a partial list, right? All of these things are getting worse because we're not doing enough fast enough to transition from fossil fuels and other greenhouse gas emitting industries. That's causing global temperatures to continue to rise. That in turn is changing the climate and causing more frequent and extreme weather-related events. And that's killing more of us, injuring more of us, destroying more of our homes and businesses, but also causing insurance companies to pay out ever larger sums. And so depending on where these events are landing and how severe they are when they land, insurers are reacting by raising price and declining to renew insurance. I think the other thing that people have a hard time understanding is that technically, legally, all you have from the insurance company is a one-year contract. It's not like the bank where you're paying money in and then it's in a bank account somewhere for you to draw on. Insurance is a product where they provide you with coverage and a promise to cover whatever is in the insurance contract for a year. But after that, their legal obligation ends. And that's really hard for people to understand. They've been paying maybe 10, 20, sometimes 30 years to the same insurance company, and all of a sudden they get non-renewed. And it doesn't feel right. And in many cases, it isn't right. But from a legal perspective, it's right. And the insurance companies have the right in every state and territory in the United States to decide who they're going to renew and who they're going to write insurance for.
From the Roots Up is brought to you by the Six Pack. Crack open some change and support the candidates and causes we need in these times. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
And if you swear that there's
I hear all the time, this is a California problem. This is just a California problem. California is doing it wrong, and that's why it's happening in California. But this isn't just a California problem, is it?
It's a global problem. Last year, the insured natural catastrophe losses globally were $154 billion. And that was a record, which broke the record from the prior year, which broke records that had been set in prior years. So you see where I'm going with this. It's getting worse every year. And the same thing in the United States, the U.S. insured natural catastrophe losses were about $117 billion. And that broke a record too. So this problem is landing globally as well as nationally, and not just in California. So the Gulf and Atlantic states, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, are all seeing this in some way, shape, or form because of losses associated with hurricane and wind. In Florida, it's gotten so bad that the insurers, the national insurance companies, will no longer write any insurance in Florida. They literally have completely pulled out of the state. In California, Washington, Oregon, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, I'm missing a few states, it's wildfire risk. And here too, insurers in varying degrees are raising price and declining to renew insurance. And then in the Midwest, New England states, interior South, there are all sorts of different perils driven by climate change, but a new one that's emerged is severe convective storms. So if you had asked an insurance professional 25 years ago, are you worried about severe convective storms? They would have looked at you blankly. What's a severe convective storm? What's happening is that because temperatures are rising globally, the atmosphere holds more water. And because climate patterns are changing, that water, sometimes referred to as an atmospheric river, will sit over a particular location for long periods of time and just dump rain. And sometimes it comes down as hail, sometimes as heavy rain, but just the sheer volume and intensity of it is damaging property. And it's not the flood aspect of it that is causing the private insurers a challenge because the private insurers got out of writing flood insurance in the United States probably 60 or 70 years ago. So that's covered by something called the National Flood Insurance Program, which has all sorts of problems we can talk about in a moment. But for the private insurers, it's just the damage caused by heavy rain. And that's landing everywhere in the United States, except maybe the desert. And so just to give you some sense of this, last year, over half of the insured global natural catastrophe losses were from severe convective storms. So climate change is not only making the things that have historically killed us, injured us, destroyed our property worse, but it's creating basically new things to kill us, injure us, and destroy our property and make a challenge for insurance companies. So there are at least 18 states across the country that are experiencing insurers non-renewing and writing less insurance. In some places, it's more acute than others, but there's no get out of climate change free card in the United States or really anywhere in the globe.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, so as we sit here, I think to myself, and I've had these conversations with folks, I'm sure you have as well, where people say, okay, fine, you know, but what can I do? I have property and if something happens to it, I can't lose all that I have in it. So this is a very personal and scary issue for folks. If people aren't insured or people are non-renewed, first of all, if you have a mortgage, your bank isn't going to let you not carry insurance because they don't want to, they see it as basically your house is their property until you finish paying the loan. If you've paid off your mortgage, you could decline coverage, but then if something happens to you, that's a catastrophic loss. That's probably your life savings going up in smoke or being knocked down by a hurricane. So, you know, what are these 18 states doing? What are other countries doing to help people with this situation? Because it is at a crisis level, I think, at this point.
What states have done, 35 states, both red and blue states, is set up something called residual markets or FAIR plans. FAIR plans stands for Fair Access to Insurance Requirements, FAIR. These are not state agencies. They're not taxpayer funded. They're actually state statutorily created involuntary associations of the private insurers in the state. That's a mouthful, but basically the state passes a law and as a requirement, as a obligation for the insurers conditioned on their being in the state, they have to join this association. And the FAIR plan or the residual market then writes insurance for the risks and exposures that the private insurers won't write. Now, it's important to understand, though, that the FAIR plans are there. And it's a place for folks to go, but it is also structured so that it's not required to have the same reserves as an insurance company. Why is that? Well, the FAIR plans are already covering the riskiest risks. And so it's already going to be very expensive because it's not spreading that risk over a large number of homes that face different levels of risk. It's taking all the risks that the private insurers have decided they don't want to cover at any cost or price. So it's already going to be expensive. So what the states have also decided is, look, we're not going to require it to have the same level of reserves as an insurance company, because if we did, then the price would be completely outside the reach of anybody. We're going to require it to have enough money to cover a typical year. But if it runs out of money in a catastrophic year, like we're experiencing now in Los Angeles, it can go to each insurance company in the market and assess them based on their relative market share and pull from the insurance companies as much money as needed for the FAIR plan to be able to pay all claims. So the good news is technically FAIR plans can't go insolvent or bankrupt. They will be able to pay claims. What we're going to need to do is, as more people get pushed onto the FAIR plan because private insurers continue to decide they can't cover homes and businesses throughout the United States, we need to shore up the FAIR plans. So one recommendation I've made and written about is to have a federal nonprofit reinsurance program for FAIR plans. So what's reinsurance? Reinsurance is insurance for insurance companies. And it may surprise your listeners to know, but insurance companies also buy insurance. They buy it from global reinsurance companies. So some of these companies may be familiar to your listeners: Munich Re, Swiss Re, Hanover Re, Zurich Re. The Re stands for reinsurance. So these are big global companies, typically headquartered in Europe or Asia, that write insurance for insurance companies. Well, they're seeing their losses go up too. So they're raising their reinsurance rates which is increasing costs for insurers, which they're then passing on to the rest of us. And FAIR plans have to buy reinsurance too, right, to help reduce some of their exposure to catastrophic losses. And they're seeing their reinsurance prices go up as well. So one way to address that would be a federal nonprofit reinsurance program for FAIR plans. So that would reduce the price of reinsurance for FAIR plans. And why targeted at FAIR plans? Well, because FAIR plans are serving those in the greatest need who can't get private insurance. I'm not ready yet to support a nonprofit reinsurance for private insurers. There's some have advocated for that, but I think a federal reinsurance program for FAIR plans is the way to go. And that would reduce costs for FAIR plans, and they could pass that cost savings on to their policyholders. The other recommendation I've made is that, again, because FAIR plan insurance is expensive because it's covering the riskiest risks, a federal or state premium subsidy for low-income and middle-income households on a sliding scale basis, not suppress the FAIR plan rate. I believe we need rates to reflect the risk, to send a signal that climate change is real, it's happening, and we might want to think twice about sprawling development in areas where it's occurring. And one of the only signals we have out there about that is the FAIR plan rate and private insurance rate. So I wouldn't suppress that. But a premium subsidy that helps lower income and middle income households on a sliding scale basis pay for the FAIR plan rate or price is something that I think we ought to do, because there are horrible equity and distributional consequences of this problem, right? The people that are going to get hit hardest and are being hit hardest by this are lower income and middle income households, because they don't have a lot of disposable income and they're seeing their insurance prices go up. And we're starting to see some evidence that people are beginning to default on their mortgages, not just in California, but across the country, because they can't afford the price of insurance, or because the mortgage lender forces them into an insurance company arrangement. They can't afford that, so then they end up losing their mortgage.
Before we go on, I just want to say, like, I think that those are incredibly innovative ideas. I haven't heard other folks talking about that. We need an insurer of last resort in a way that has the resources to cover this, because as we've just outlined, these risks aren't going down, they're going up. We're talking about an enormous amount of money that has to be backstopped in some way, and going after the greatest risk with a reinsurance, a nonprofit reinsurance plan, is something I haven't heard before, but I think it's absolutely an interesting idea and a place for advocacy for our listeners, because I never want to leave people in a place where, oh my gosh, it's getting worse and your insurance is going to get more expensive and that's all we have time for today. Good luck out there. I always want to have a place for advocacy. I also love that you brought in the ACA and the premium subsidy idea, because yeah, you're right. It is the lower and middle income folks who are doing that. And probably also small landlords, people that might have inherited a piece of property and rented out, right? And the only way that they can make the money back when their insurance gets canceled or non-renewed or they get pushed on the FAIR plan is to raise rents. And I don't think anybody would say we don't have a housing crisis in this country right now. So what happens then is those lower and middle income folks who don't own property end up paying the increase in insurance costs in the form of higher rent.
This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net.
There's something else, though, that your listeners can do, and this requires a little explanation, so bear with me. But it turns out that both based on empirical evidence and science, we know that adaptation and mitigation works. So home hardening, for example, doing things to make your home less likely to burn in the event of a wildfire, defensible space, making sure that you have at least a 5-foot zone around your home that's clear of any vegetation or structures, and then beyond that, within 100 feet, dramatically reduced vegetation. And then landscape scale mitigation, where we actually go into the forest and manage the forest the way that nature used to manage our western forests. In our western forests, before western settlement, fire was a routine part of the ecology of western forests. It would burn out the low-level trees. It would burn out the low-level vegetation. Our forests were characterized by a lot less fuel. And then we had western settlement, genocide against Native American peoples who used to do landscape management through cultural burning, and about 150 years of fire suppression. So our forests in the West now are choked with fuel. Well, we know that is a major contributor to the increasing severity of wildfires in the West. So the U.S. Forest Service, CAL FIRE in California, local fire officials and conservation groups and just about everybody are in agreement that we need to better manage our forests by reintroducing controlled fire into the forest or prescribed burns to reduce the volume of fuel, and also thinning and removing low-lying vegetation. Not clear cutting, but thinning. So these practices, which are referred to as forest management, make a big difference, and they can also be accounted for in insurance modeling. I published a paper with the Nature Conservancy and Willis Towers Watson in 2021 that showed this, that the models can account for it. But the problem is that when the insurers decide whether to renew or write you new insurance, the risk score models they're using don't account for home hardening, defensible space, landscape scale mitigation. So you could be spending thousands of dollars on home hardening, thousands on a defensible space. You could be paying local and state and federal taxes for forest management. You could be next to or in a forest that is being managed, and you get no credit for that. And so there has been some progress on the pricing side. My successor issued a regulation a couple of years back that requires a little discount if you're doing home hardening and defensible space and you're in a firewise community, and that's great. But the discount doesn't help you if they won't write you the insurance. And it's very, very, you know, very, very frustrating for folks. So last year with the Nature Conservancy, I wrote a bill, Senate Bill 1060, that State Senator Josh Becker authored, which simply required that the models that the insurers use to decide whether to write or renew the insurance, the underwriting models, account for these proven mitigation measures, home hardening, defensible space, landscape scale, and community scale mitigation. And the insurers killed the bill. So what your listeners could do is advocate to their assembly members and their state senators and the governor that legislation be enacted in California that requires the models the insurers use to account for mitigation.
Yeah, you're right. If your premium doesn't go down, if it doesn't have to be accounted for in some way, it's very difficult for working class folks to go out and spend thousands of dollars on these efforts only to see their policy either get canceled or their premiums continue to go up, or they end up on a FAIR plan regardless. Like, just no, you know. So I appreciate that. And I think the advocacy there is incredibly important. All these things we've talked about, by the way, including the climate crisis itself, are going to require significant public and private investment. So a lot of money that's going to be needed for these efforts going forward. What do you think about ideas like polluters pay in terms of finding some way to get money from the folks who are at the forefront of creating this crisis into the solutions we're going to need to mitigate the consequences of the crisis?
Approaches like those that New York and Vermont have enacted, where you set up a super fund that polluters have to pay into. And in this context, the polluters are the major oil and gas companies whose emissions are major drivers of the climate change that are causing these severe and catastrophic weather events that are causing huge damages and losses and costs. So a bill has been introduced just recently in California to do that as well, and I support that. But each of us also can do things that make a difference. We can look at our own carbon footprint. We can look at ways that we can reduce the emissions related to how we live. And while it seems small, collectively it makes a big difference. And it is something that we should do. We shouldn't despair at this moment. I mean, there's still a lot that can and should be done at the state level to make a difference. And that's why, you know, it's terrific that we're in a state like California, where the state leadership is open to these ideas and willing to continue to advance the goal of transitioning to a net zero economy. But they need to be encouraged as well and sometimes pushed to enact these sorts of bills and these sorts of regulatory approaches. So I would encourage your listeners to support SB 222, support the Climate Superfund bill that's been introduced, and support some of the other things that we've talked about on this show.
Well, Dave, I started today, you know, it's with this dark cloud hanging over my head and thinking about all the ways that this, you know, really harms people in their daily lives. And yet here we've been discussing this for a while now, and I feel better. I feel like there's something I could do. I feel like there's something our listeners could do. And You know, and maybe if there is any kind of silver lining on those dark clouds, it's that there, what's happened, what these catastrophic events we've experienced has gotten people that sharpened their focus on what we need to do together and individually. So thank you so much for being here today with me, Dave. As always, I love the conversation. I love the thoughtful way that you go at these issues. And yeah, it's just been amazing. I couldn't have imagined a better conversation on this topic. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Sean. And thanks for your digging in deep and covering these issues and helping to share with your listeners how the dots can be connected between what's happening vis-a-vis the insurance crisis and what's happening in the climate crisis and the need to transition from fossil fuels, and then what people can do about it. So really appreciate your leadership in that regard.
We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. This is From the Roots Up. We are talking about homeowners insurance today. And, you know, let's talk about what I like to say is the where I'm going to leave you, right? What can we do? What do each of us have the opportunity to do in our lives to make things better while we're waiting for the sort of system to get better around us? Now, the first thing we have to do is home hardening. And, you know, this is what's being asked of you probably if you've had a non-renewal notice, right? They're going to tell you things like removing vegetation next to the home, keeping your grass cut. You know, if you have property weed eating, you know, they're also going to talk about adding flame retardant materials to the exterior of your home, closing up the vents, making smaller holes so ashes don't blow into your attic, using tempered glass that's not going to shatter in the heat of a fire if a fire were to come. The many, many things they're going to ask you to do. And if you have the means, you can do them. And I think what we ought to be asking for more of is support from our insurance companies and from our state and local, maybe tax breaks for doing these kinds of things. Because bottom line is, if we have more fire resilient communities, we have less damage to rebuild from if God forbid, a fire does occur. So I do believe we ought to be putting some incentive structure in place for the next 20 years, for example, to really re-envision the way that homes are built and upgrade homes that already exist in these fire-prone areas. We need fire-safe communities. And just like we talked about with Paradise, that's creating fire-resistant infrastructure and building codes. That's preparedness and education, right? Making sure that people understand what they can do. And then we also need strong partnerships with local fire departments, you know, often having teams, equipment, and fire breaks in place, like making sure that the firefighters themselves are part of that, you know, pre-fire protection process, right? Because ultimately, they're there to fight the fire once it breaks out. But if they're going to fight it effectively, we have to have things in place in advance, coordination, logistics, and just basic infrastructure like fire breaks and equipment that is needed in place to quickly go after these fires when they break out so that they don't become enormous and burn down entire communities. But more than anything, I just want you to be safe out there. When you get the notice of what you need to do to make your own place more resilient, do what you can do, right? If you have to take out a small loan to do it, do that. Of course, pay it off as fast as you can. But do it. Please, please, please take care of yourself. From the Roots Up is about us, all of us. And I'll just say this, as I say every week, everything is impossible until it becomes possible. Let's make things possible together. I'm Sean Frame, and I'll see you next week. If you want to reach out to us, send an email to fromtherootsupshow@gmail.com.